Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefree, and this is episode number 302. Really appreciate you guys being here. Appreciate those of you that like, subscribe. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsor, Train Heroic, for bringing this episode to you for free. Only partner with companies that I believe in, both the people and the product. And the guys at Train Heroic are fantastic people, first and foremost. But they also have a great product. So if you're in the market, please reach out to them. If not, next time you see them at a conference or whatnot, let them know how much you appreciate them being part of the show. This week, I'm joined by Chris Grotzky. Chris is an assistant strength coach up at Holy Cross. Jeff Oliver's friend of the show, whatnot, and doing great things up there, man. But appreciate you coming on the show.
Appreciate you having me, Ron.
Chris, we were talking a little bit off camera about, you know, you spent most of your career up in the Northeast, which is by a lot of people's standards is the dream, right? Is to stay close to where you're from. But explain, you know, talk a little bit about your experience, but which experience best defined you? Like, which experience had the biggest impact on your development as a coach?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been fortunate to stay in the same place. I grew up here and, you know, small school guy. I started in Division III, you know, making $2,300, you know, a year, you know, with free housing and as many master's classes as I could take. And just working my way up from there. I'd say the biggest place that I learned was at Assumption College. You know, I was the director of all 24 sports. So there's not a lot of time to read or even be at your desk when you have that kind of load. But you learn so much. You know, I was, you know, in the weight room training 8 groups a day and, you know, make some mistakes and you see what works, you see what doesn't work. And there was a lot of trial and error in those years. And, you know, being responsible for all those athletes and the interaction with coaches, I think was huge. Now, I also am a little bit different where I was a sport coach and a strength coach coming up. You know, I interned under Jeff Oliver in college. And, you know, I told them I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And they used to let me sit in on the football meetings as well as be in the strength and conditioning department. So I get to see both sides. And I did both for a while. This is year 4 now that I've just been a strength coach. But I think having the unique perspective of, you know, I've recruited for football. I've, you know, coached football. I've run, you know, film sessions, the whole deal, along with the strength and conditioning and the recruiting makes it a little easier for me to see what these coaches are seeing. There's usually a divide in a lot of places between the sport coach and the strength coach as far as like wavelength. And I feel like I can speak both languages pretty well. So I feel like that's helped me a lot when it comes to communication with, you know, everybody in the athletic department.
Oh, I think that's fantastic. I want to dig into that a little bit more as well. But before we do, one of the main questions we always ask is what's the biggest mistake you've made and how you've learned from it?
Oh man, my, you know, Mike Boyle says it all the time that, you know, he probably hurt a lot of people in the early years. You know, my first couple years as a strength coach, you know, I put a square peg through a round hole a lot. I thought that everybody should squat. I didn't believe that your knees should come over your toes when you went down. And now like we operate under progression regression principles. And, you know, there's a whole bunch of different squat variations going on in our weight room at one time. And, you know, we're going to be able to put the gas pedal down on people at different, you know, parts of their training age and, you know, what they can handle. And I just found that to be my biggest mistake was thinking that it was a one-size-fits-all deal. And it's not. And, you know, we're going to get the most out of people in here, and it just might not be with that same exercise, to use that as an example.
I couldn't agree with you more. You mentioned, you know, being a football coach and a strength coach, and I've often said, even on this show, I get crucified, you know, for it when I say this, but, you know, I don't think that you can be a great strength coach for a sport that you didn't play. I think you can be a very good strength coach, but I don't think that you can be a great strength coach unless you've experienced those stresses. I mean, unless you walked into a stadium with 30,000, 40,000, 60,000, 100,000 people hating your guts and having to make that catch or make that block or whatever. I don't know if you can really experience that, you know, understand that, you know, and how to prepare for that. But throughout my career, I've always said that I was a football coach in the weight room. That was my specialty. Instead of coaching quarterbacks, my specialty was coaching, you know, strength, you know.
Right.
Talk a little bit about, you know, your journey in that road, what your kind of thoughts are on that, but more importantly, how you think it's benefited you having the dual experience.
I think, honestly, time management and efficiency is what's really shown throughout the years. Like when you have to recruit the state of Maryland and you have to set up the film cameras for practice and you have to run your own defensive line meeting room and you're in charge of all 120 football players in the weight room and you got to weigh them twice a week and you just learn how to become really efficient with your time and you learn how to not waste other people's time. And I think that's the biggest thing that it taught me when I was doing all of it. And my boss, you know, Bob Chesney, who's one of the better young football coaches coming up, he's awesome. And he always questioned, like, how does this guy get it done? And I just think through trial and error, just taking on a lot and figuring out how to be efficient with it and just getting better. And I don't think it was easy in the early years. I think I made a lot of mistakes with time management. And, you know, no one ever wants to be the guy that gets ripped. And, you know, you just eventually learn to, you know, figure it out.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, I think a couple of things you said there, you know, nobody wants to be the guy that gets ripped. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, being in that kind of highly charged environment as a football strength coach or a football coach, you know, you have to be on your P's and Q's or you're going to get, I mean, it's a different type of environment that's not often replicated in the weight room. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. And I think you're going to rise, you're going to, you know, I tell people all the time when I worked at South Florida, you know, for 10 years with Jim Levin, he's the best guy on the planet to work for, in my opinion. You know, he's unreal, but it made me 100 times better as a strength. Right. Because I never felt like I was safe. I never felt like every day I had to kind of earn my stripes.
I'd agree with that 100%.
Be ready. And I think that's something that can be taken over. In the strength, I don't think you necessarily need to cuss a guy out or you need to, you know, put him on blast in front of the athletes or whatever. But
right. But
there is some level of that you know, you're on your P's and Q's because of that.
Right. And I think that when you have to do all that stuff, and all the strength and conditioning world especially, they crucify people like me that had to wear all those hats to make it. I didn't get my first full-time job with benefits until I was 29. Right. I'm 33 now. Like, I scratched and clawed all the way to the top, right? I'm at the Division I college where I grew up. Like, this is a dream for me. And I don't know if you've seen this facility out here, but it's ridiculous. You know, $95 million facility, better than a lot of FBS schools have. There hasn't been one day I haven't been thankful to come to work. But they say, you know, how could you be good at both? And I think the answer is you can be good at all of it. Just how much deeper can you dive into it? And now just having football and golf here at Holy Cross, I can do a heck of a lot more football-wise. You know, we're making individual programs for inside the box and outside the box like Coach Ken does. I couldn't do that because of the size of the room at other places. At Fitchburg State University, I had 2 squat racks and 2 benches. Like, and you had to get 90 kids through that weight room. You know, it's a lot bigger now. We have 17 platforms and racks, and we can get the whole team in here in one shot.
Right.
So you get better as you go up with the resources, I think. And the time is the biggest resource.
Right. Couldn't agree more. Well, some of that time, you know, you guys have dug into using technology in a big way, you know, be it DBT with GymAware or using a piss pin with hydration. You know, talk a little bit about how you're utilizing some of this technology in a unique way and why that's so important to you.
All right. So the hydration pen is awesome for us. So we believe that there's a direct correlation between soft tissue injury and dehydration. I believe that you could pretty much make it through anything if you're hydrated beforehand. So we hydration test the football team before practice. And if they're not to the standard that the pen says, so it's a refractometer pen. So it shoots light through it, They peanut cup for me, hand it to me. I check it out. And if it's good, they practice. If it's not good, we do it enough timeouts, about 2 hours, so that they have time to rehydrate. We don't want to do it right up against practice and then say, hey, you're not practicing today. Coaches would never allow that to happen. But 2 hours, we believe, is enough time to get rehydrated. If a kid doesn't pass it in that next test right before practice, then he's with me until he has to go out there. We get him a electrolyte solution, and then he pees again. If he passes at that point, we're good. So during camp is the only time that we'll see soft tissue injuries if they do come up. And so what we'll do to see, just to make sure that we're doing our own research, that say a kid popped a hamstring, right?
Right.
We will test at the end of practice him and a control from his position group. So use a linebacker, for example, in camp. He pulled it. He had an O28, which would be, you know, really dehydrated. We tested another linebacker, 0088, and that would be passing. So every time that happens, we want to control and the person that got hurt, just so we have something to reference it against. But for us, you know, if we're going to run 40s, they're hydration testing before the 40s. And if you don't pass, you don't run the 40. Simple as that. So I think that's a good way for us to minimize injury. The strength and conditioning, our biggest thing, in my opinion, is to keep the kids on the field playing. And if I can do everything in my power to make sure they're doing that, that's what we're going to accomplish.
Yeah, the word, I'm trying to think of the word, it's escaping me right now, but what, you know, when you're overhydrated or you hydrate too fast.
Hypoglycemia, I believe, is the name of it, right?
Yeah. Is there any concerns with that, with trying to, you know, to kind of force feed them, you know, water?
I think for college athletes in general, and definitely college football players, it's hard to get them hydrated. Sorry about that.
Right.
So that's my girlfriend. So we've read about it a little bit. The athletic trainers aren't worried about it at all. And it's harder for us to get them hydrated than to put them into a state of, you know, I think I read one article that said somebody, you know, passed away from hypoglycemia like one time in the last 15 years was the example they used. So right. I just think they're so few and far between. And, you know, in the hot summertime when they're out there running, I just think it would be so hard to do that.
Yeah, I would agree with that 100%. I would venture to say you're probably seeing far more people that are dehydrated coming in those 2 hours before than hydrated. But I agree. What about with VBT? You're doing, I mean, doing a lot of work there. How are you implementing that into your program?
So mostly we're using it now. No, so I've read about it for years, and I've never had the technology to do it at any place I've been. So I've been using it for a year now. We pretty much use it to auto-regulate and to make sure that they are, you know, where they're supposed to be for that day. If the percentage that we're going to work off of is 77%, you know, or let's just say 80%, we know that the science says that should move at 0.84 meters per second. We want to make sure they're there. If they're not there, we're going to, you know, take some weight off or put some weight on if they're smashing it. We use that all in season. We squat after games. So we make sure we tag that on them after games. And, you know, we don't do a lot of volume in season, but we make sure that the velocity is where it needs to be. And then it's great for fatigue monitoring, right? So if they're coming in there and they're not where they need to be, then we'll readjust on the fly. So it's great data for us. And now our GymAware is attached to the cloud system, goes up to the 85-inch TVs we have, which have leaderboards. So now these guys, every time they hit a set, they go up there and it repopulates in like a leaderboard fashion, tells them what their watts are at, and they really enjoy competing against each other. The one thing I'll say, it's not all sunshine and rainbows with GymAware. You know, it's Bluetooth connected. It's not like an old school, what's it called? What are the tablets that Brown uses? Tendo, right? Like a Tendo that would direct connect, right. I think, honestly, would be a little bit more efficient for us. With the amount of the Bluetooth going in and out is the only thing that, you know, gets us, you know, a little bit uptight over here. And at the end of the day, the athlete still needs to get stronger. So when I got, you know, 10 guys being like, coach, my GymAware is not working. So the athlete still needs to work. So we'll stop it there and we'll go. So it's kind of sucks that, you know, some kids don't get to use it some days because the Bluetooth connection stinks, but we got to move on. Like I know what a fast moving bar should look like and what a slow moving bar should look like. So I can use the other 9 years of coaching to, you know, try to auto regulate that myself, but it is a cool tool when it works.
Yeah. Well, I think that's with any tool, right? All tools, there's pluses and minuses with everything, but the benefit far outweighs the negative when you're able to really dial it in, and it is working at a high level. You talked a little bit about your environment, you know, and how that's been built over time, and you know, beautiful facility, just put a lot of time and effort into growing that program over the years and been there for a long time. And it wasn't something that just, you know, was handed. He wasn't handed this nice facility when he first got there. He had to build it. Talk a little bit about how you guys have gone about building a culture there at Holy Cross, and how you've both gotten the buy-in of the athletes, but also the administration.
So I think it comes down to accountability and just holding kids accountable. Well, when we first took over the football program here, there was a tight end, for example, that his three lifts combined, bench, squat, clean, was like 710. All right, where we're saying we need those guys, if they're going to play for us, to be around 1,100. Right. So, you know, the coaches that we retained said, none of these kids will ever quit. They'll never quit. They're going to hang on to the scholarship forever. And they never used tangible data. There was nothing they said where, like, here's where you are. Here's where we need you. Is it possible to get there? So the second we started doing that, we had three kids leave the program going into that summer that just weren't like that. I don't think they probably could have ever played here. So holding them accountable, showing them, you know, the data that we're using to make these decisions. You know, Johnny isn't a bad football player because we don't like him. You know, Johnny's a bad football player because these are the mistakes he's continually making. And this is, you know, where his strength is. This is where we need him to be. And when you show the kid he's that far away, sometimes he steps away because he knows that deep down he might not ever be able to get there. And that's okay. So that's the first part of it. Attention to detail is huge. All right. Like the little things is what we harp on every single day. And that's obviously going to stack up in your favor, or that's going to stack up against you. So getting them to understand that, handling things in the moment in a positive way. So like, we'll never demean anybody. We're going to be extremely demanding, but we're never going to be demeaning. Every main block of the lifting session, I yell 3, 2, 1, and the whole group yells what set we're on. And we do that whole first pairing together so that I know exactly where everybody is and, you know, what's getting done. I think in some places, some kids can hide, and we don't ever want to make an environment where there's an opportunity to hide. We want to shine the spotlight on everybody at all times, you know, to get that competitive atmosphere going. And then just a relentless effort, I think, is another, the last thing that, you know, we're going to preach. I got one of these bottles right here. It's probably all on here. Attention to detail, positive attitude, and urgency. That's our three, you know, staples. You got another one? Can you hear me?
Got you now. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I think my girlfriend keeps calling. I don't know how to put my phone on airplane mode. I apologize.
That's all right. No problem, man. Well, we end the show with some resources anyways. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Never let the highs get too high. Never let the lows get too low. Try to stay on an even keel. You know, never get too excited, but never get too down on yourself. And I try to live by that every day. I don't want anybody to know if I'm having a bad day, and I don't want to be over the top great. I just want to be constantly, you know, constantly where we should be.
Yeah, it's such a hard thing to do as a coach sometimes, but it's, you know, or your own kids or whatever, but it is so important to keep.
They're going
to
feel it on you right away.
Yeah. But that. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
So for book, I just finished Precision Nutrition. I don't know if that counts, but that was probably the most well put together certification that I've seen. Great facts in there, great take home as far as calculations for, you know, caloric intake and their system for using thumb, palm, fist. You know, our kids, you know, football guys don't want to count calories. It's going to stress them out, and they're probably not going to do it. So giving them something so simple to use has been huge. Outside of a certification book, I'd say the Black Book of Training Secrets by Christian Thibodeau. Coach Ollie had me read that in 2009. I probably reread it in 2014. You know, still loved it, and you know, that's probably my favorite. I've read Cal's book Triphasic back to back, front to back, but I think the Black Book of Training Secrets would have to be my favorite.
Yeah, all very good ones, both of those. Well, man, I know we jumped in pretty quick and you know, got through this pretty quick, but really appreciate you jumping on and sharing a little bit of what you guys are doing up there. And I've said it many times that I think what Jeff has built, what you guys continue to build up there, is pretty impressive all the way around. And just appreciate the fact that you're coming on and sharing so openly with everybody.
Hey, thanks for having me. Means a lot, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Thanks.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefree.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefree's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefree in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefree can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefree. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefree. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.